The Ghost Goal Podcast.
The FA Cup delivered yet again, with two of the games of the season in Saturday and Sunday's four quarterfinals, while things in the Premier League, around the Champions League and relegation places, heated up, while other teams were away fighting for a spot in the FA Cup semifinals. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Call Podcast, episode 445. Of course, I'm referring to that Manchester United-Liverpool goal fest, the 4-3, but also that Coventry-Wolves game had a crazy ending as well, with Coventry going through 3-2. We're going to get to talking about a lot of that, plus those Premier League results now. Javier, how are you doing, man?
Doing well.
Nice weekend off, no Arsenal?
Yeah, it was nice. It's nice to not be able to sit back for a weekend and enjoy a little bit of the footy. Get a little bit of a break too, but not looking forward for 2 weeks of no more club football and just praying everyone comes back healthy.
Especially because outside of the European games, making your sacrifices, guys. It's like mostly international friendlies over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so like I don't want like
qualifiers for the Euros.
I want players going to Brazil and yeah, exactly. If there isn't an actual qualifier going, then like I don't want these players going. But anyway, I'm just moaning, and it was a good, like you said, it was a good weekend of games. That United Liverpool game was just so back and forth, and so much happened there. I mean, it's just some awful goals. Really just terrible goals. The quality of play was just subpar. I mean, it was an exciting game, but it was just kind of a shit show from both sides, don't you think?
Well, you could really see like it wearing on both teams' legs. Like certain players, I mean, the commentators kept bringing up how Bruno Fernandes like just couldn't move an extra time. Like he was barely walking around the pitch. But he's an extreme example, but there are other examples or were other examples other than the substitutes for both teams where, you know, you could just see the players, the amount of games both Liverpool and Manchester United have had to play, the injuries some of their players on both sides were coming back from. The quality dropped off for sure. I'm not disagreeing with that, but you could also see how much the game meant to both teams. And we've seen these spurts for Manchester United, and it's caused me to draw comparisons to my own team, Chelsea, plenty of times this year, even though United are definitely having a better season than Chelsea. This was one of those times where you just saw the Manchester United players think, okay, we can't have another like slip up. Our whole season is riding on, you know, this game. If we lose at home to Liverpool and the FA Cup, the only competition we have any chance of getting any success out of this season, then, you know, a bunch of us are going to be sold, which may happen anyway, and the manager is probably going to get fired at the end of the season, which may still happen anyway. But it was good to see a little fight in Manchester United. They started a game really well, took the lead 10 minutes in through McTominay, but then you saw Liverpool have that same realization themselves that, you know, their chance at like a nice send-off for Jurgen Klopp with like a second cup and with the FA Cup after winning the Carabao, they could see that sort of drifting away, so they woke up themselves and managed to take advantage of United going to sleep for a couple minutes there at the end of the first half. And frankly, you know, off the balance of play, Liverpool probably should have been out of sight at some point in the second half, because the amount of chances they created and squandered before Antony eventually got the equalizer to force extra time, you could feel it with each chance that was missed. You were just like, oh no, they're letting United hang around here. United just need the one opportunity, the one swell of confidence from their fans to, you know, prop them up a little bit more. And one unlikely source of an equalizer for Antony, especially on his weaker right foot.
Yeah, it was a good little swivel finish.
You gotta credit him, a nice finish. Very nice swiveling like finish. I was surprised to see it, but good for him.
But again, all of those goals, the McTominay, McAllister, Salah, Antony, they were all deflections, ricochets around. I mean, it was just, again, terrible goals. The Elliott goal deflection. All of them came from like mistakes off the back. Ahmed Diallo goal. I mean, what were Liverpool doing? How were they so open at the back in the 120th minute with
miscommunication between Endo and Elliott? The ball was.
And then for the Rashford goal, It was, I believe it was Darwin Nunez's pass.
Oh, yeah, Nunez.
That was also just absolutely off. I mean, all of every single goal was like a mistake or a terrible just defensive. I mean, it was, again, it was just, it was entertaining, but it was horrendous to watch. You know, you call it game of the season. I mean, I don't put it even in my top like 20 games of the season this season. It was exciting. It was fun, but it just. A shit show.
I'm talking purely in terms of excitement.
Yeah, I was. Liverpool are clearly a better team. They just ran out of gas, like you said. And I think United, you know, like you said, their whole season was riding on this. They brought everything they had to the table, and it worked. In this, and you got to give them some credit for that. But I do also like, what was Diallo doing? Why are you taking your shirt off when you already have a yellow card for standing in front of the ball? You know, when the other team was trying to take a kick in midfield. No advantage at all.
He's young. He's young. Nah, he got wrapped up in the moment.
Stupid.
I agree. I mean, it's not a great red card to take.
Well, now and now he's not going to be able to
start the semi-final like he could have, but he's not going to.
The red card is going to be affecting the next Premier League game. Now he won't get to play in the next Premier League game.
I think. Well, when was the last time he played a Premier League game? I also think
he just scored. You don't think that that might affect his chances of playing in the next game? I don't know. To me, it seems like a dumb thing to do as a young player when you go and get a winner like that. When you're already on a yellow card, he definitely knew he was going to get sent off for that. And just,
here's the thing.
You didn't win anything.
You made the point that the quality wasn't great and the game was driven by mistakes. But you get down to this point of the season where, you know, most of the top teams, if they're involved in European competitions themselves and have had deep cup runs like Liverpool have had, most of them have a lot of games in their big players' legs, and you know they're starting to feel it around this point of the season. It's at that point where you know all of the Pep Guardiola tactics, trying to control every game with possession, all of that goes out the window. You can try to control every facet of the game as much as you want, but a lot of times, and this game included, the fact of the matter is, it's about making fewer mistakes than your opponent and taking advantage of your opponent's mistakes. And this game was that in a nutshell. Like you said, deflections, saves like Onana's one that went straight into Salah's lap for the 2-1 goal.
Darwin missed sitters.
Yeah, Darwin giving the ball away for Rashford to
equalize 3-3. For as much as we praise Darwin and how well he'd been doing lately, he just always seems to revert back to his Darwin mean sometimes. And in big situations like this,
and keeping that in mind, that makes me think that it's definitely not over for Erik ten Hag at Manchester United, because he's still managing to get these kinds of performances out of Manchester United's players. They haven't given up on him yet. Otherwise, United would have gotten run over like 4-1 or 5-1 on Sunday. Now, do they need to improve? Do they need to start applying a more control and, you know, tactical nous?
They finally had two fit left and right backs. Dalot and Wan-Bissaka finally came back from injury. I think that helped them a lot. You know, it helped them be a complete shit show defensively, having Lindelof as one of their wing backs. So he still played Lindelof with Varane at center back and was, you know, not very good. But again, I'm not even surprised he wasn't good, because he's been playing fullback for the last couple of months. So, you know, just they still got to sort out those injury issues. And I don't think United really have anywhere to go this season other than the FA Cup. So I think good for them to at least, because I see that some of these Premier League pundits and people are trying to tout them as still in that top four race because they're 9 points off with the game in hand. They're not catching up.
Well, there's always the option of, you know, maybe they sneak into fifth place and that becomes a Champions League spot. We've mentioned that before. They win the FA Cup now, which seems more reasonable now that they've drawn Coventry in the semi-final. And whoever wins that will play the winner of Chelsea and Manchester City. You'd presume that's going to be Manchester City, but you never know. If they get Chelsea in the final, they'll fancy themselves for that. And they finish the season with an FA Cup final and an FA Cup win after winning the Carabao Cup in Ten Hag's first season and still being in the Champions League. Then you may not have enjoyed the journey too much if you're a Manchester United fan. You'll definitely want to see more improvement next season. But you'd be willing to, I feel like United fans, maybe not the ownership, especially when you consider Jim Ratcliffe, the new ownership coming in, maybe they just want to make a change for the sake of, you know, making a change. That's all it really took for Todd Boehly to do the same by canning Tuchel within a few months of buying Chelsea. but maybe it convinces the owners, okay, this is the right man, at least for the next season or couple of months, whatever, to see the club into the future. So it's, I think it's a huge result for United, just to demonstrate that, you know, a lot of their, you know, big buys and manager are not just dead in the water waiting for the season to end for them to be moved on. So, and for Liverpool, yeah, they would have liked another chance at a trophy for Klopp, but there's still the Europa League. I'm sure they're still one of the favorites for that.
I was going to say, I feel like they're the huge,
and they're top of the league.
The massive favorites. They're not top of the league. They're second.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I was getting used to that.
Get that right.
They're top of the league on points behind. They're in second on goal difference. They might as well be top of the league, you know?
Oh, no, because they're far behind on goal difference as well, Alex. So please don't try to say those things.
Yeah, well, City will solve that for them when they pipe you guys in a couple of weeks, right?
No one's piped us yet this season, Alex.
Yeah, but City will. It's at the Etihad.
I guess West Ham.
They'll pipe you guys there.
I think West Ham scored three in the FA Cup. In that win in the FA Cup. And then Raya saved the penalty to, so it wasn't
probably the Carabao Cup because you guys lost to Liverpool in the FA Cup.
Oh, it was Carabao Cup. Yeah, it was.
Let's digress. Liverpool are still in the title race, so that and the Europa League would, along with the Carabao Cup, would still make for a nice send off for Klopp.
Well, I was going to say, yeah.
He seemed
the whole point of this.
He seemed
was
pretty
the FA
pissy
Cup
afterwards.
He was very.
Did you see
pissy.
Him call a reporter out of shape?
Yeah, because like, they were implying all these questions about the loss. I'm sure he didn't really care that much about it. I'm sure it would have been nice.
It's I always laugh when I see Klopp be pissy because he has such like a
jolly demeanor.
I wouldn't say jolly. He's perceived by people as like this great guy. He is, I'm sure, a perfectly nice person. But you know, he has a vindictive and, you know, bitter side to him as well when he loses. And It's always funny to me to see that when it comes out, though it's not too often because he obviously doesn't lose too many games.
Alex, that is a great segue into the next game we're going to... Oh, wait. No, it's not.
It is. You know what? I'm going to segue this shit. You know who is never bitter? Ange Postecoglou.
I was about to say, Alex, but he was after this game. He was bitter.
Was he? Oh, no,
for
I
the
missed
first
that. Oh, okay.
time.
Catch
I have
me up
never
on this.
Seen a bitter Ange Postecoglou. I have never seen a rattled Ange Postecoglou as much as he was in the press conference after this game. I mean, usually Ange after these games, you know, he'll try to highlight the positives of his team. I think for the first time this season, we've seen Tottenham lose, but lose without playing Ange's play style. Losing without
the energy and the
swashbuckling.
The result.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned
Fulham
the result
beat
yet.
Tottenham 3-0 at Craven Cottage.
And let me
on
say,
Saturday.
Well-deserved 3-0.
Could have been more.
Could have been more. Did something similar to what they did to United at Old Trafford, but you know, they didn't take their chances at Old Trafford, but they took their chances here. And you know, I think just the way that they were beaten, especially in that first half. I mean, Ange tried to say that it was kind of an even first half. I thought Fulham dominated them in the first half and then dominated them even better, or like even more resounded in the second half. And Postecoglou talked about how multiple times in his interview, how after they were 2-0 down, he just never saw his team getting back in the game. And I've never seen him talk that way. I've never seen him so down after an interview. I've never seen him rattled. I've never seen him bitter. You know, he was making excuses. All of these things that I hadn't seen in Postecoglou happened after this game. So, to me, I have a whole new, like, I don't know if it was just a one-off, if it was just the commentator said this is a bad day at the office for Tottenham. You know, they did have, James Maddison, I think in like the 10th minute, put a, you know, nice shot from the top of the box wide, and then they pretty much didn't have many chances. I mean, they had that one Werner chance after it was already 3-0, when Werner missed a sitter in the back post, but other than that, like...
Son missed a good chance in the first half. A cutback from Maddison, where Fulham had just had a good attack themselves, and then Tottenham went right up the other end, and Son missed a cutback similar to Madison's cutback miss. So I could see him thinking it was somewhat even in the first half, but and then when you couple that with like the Timo Werner like sitter, I'm just probably thinking in his head, that's 3-3 right there. It could have been 3-3, but of course that's not how it works. If Tottenham had taken those earlier chances, then the whole the whole layout of the game shifts and doesn't, you know, progress the same way it eventually did.
How good is Rodrigo Muniz, Alex? Is he the real deal? 7 goals now and 1 assist in 10 games.
He's taken his chances very well. But I do have to say, like, that the one standout from the Tottenham lineup that I think Ange or any Tottenham fan could lean on as an excuse was Radu Dragosin in that, the center of that defense, paired with Romero. But, you know, Mickey van de Ven was like a late injury. He couldn't make it, did a late injury test and couldn't play. So Dragosin, the January signing from Genoa, he came in, and just the way he dealt with that first Muniz goal, where the ball gets played out to Anthony Robinson on the left wing. They're just inside of Fulham's half when Dragosin decides to like shift and start moving over to Tottenham's right, Fulham's left, where the ball has obviously been played out to, and just leaves Muniz just completely unmarked to go make like a curled sort of run to the back post for Anthony Robinson.
It was wild how open he was.
He just basically dared Robinson, like, okay, curve a ball around the right back and the other center back and around me, and give Muniz like a just an easy like 1v1 basically. That inexperience, like, that stands out to me. And Dragosin was also there, failed to clear the second Muniz goal. And honestly, if Muniz hadn't scored it or hadn't gotten to it on time, it would have been a penalty. And Dragosin, like, just absolutely took out Muniz trying to clear it. So I don't know if it was debut, but not a great, like, starting, like, early start for Dragosin. Who's a young defender, young Romanian defender. I'm sure he'll improve, but you know that stands out to me as a reason why.
Welcome to Tottenham the Premier League, sir.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to go to go away to teams like Fulham, who are mid-table, and they all, like, a bunch of these mid-table teams have the ability and have the players on the right day to absolutely shred you to pieces.
Can Fulham help us, Alex? They play Manchester City and Liverpool. They've been giant killers this season. They beat us twice. They beat Tottenham. They beat Manchester United. They've beaten all the top teams.
That mid-table malaise sets in at some point for a lot of teams.
They are now in contention for 7th place, Alex. They're 6 points off it, so I'm sure they won't be thinking that it's mid-table malaise for them, since they're already completely safe.
Maybe, who knows? We'll see. It can swing with a couple of results. You know, if that 6 points becomes 9 and 9 points or 10 and there's only 7 or 8 games left, then all of a sudden those last 7 games, the Fulham players are not quite as aggressive. We've seen them lose to teams like Wolves at home before recently, so it really depends. It's hard to make a prediction for that, but yeah, that's going to be. I'm certainly happy that Chelsea are done with playing Fulham this season and that somehow we managed to get 2 wins against them.
This is a double over us. I'm going to kill myself, Alex.
No, they didn't. They got a draw.
Yes.
In the first game.
It felt like the double because we were up 2-0 in that first game and a red card.
I think it's probably the only team this season that you guys have, like, failed to get a win against.
Completely struggled against them. Yeah, just both games you just weren't at it.
Right, well, let's shift our focus down the Premier League table to Luton 1, Nottingham Forest 1, the relegation six-pointer of this weekend, though they're was another relegation six-pointer, but it doesn't really seem to matter as much because earlier today, on Monday, it was announced that Nottingham Forest have been deducted 4 points due to financial rules breaches. It's been coming. They announced that the charges were being brought against Forest, I want to say a couple months back, but this is the punishment's finally been brought down. It puts Forest down below Luton in the league table and into the relegation zone. I'm sure they'll appeal it, like Everton did with theirs. But who knows if that will be done in time. It can take months sometimes for those appeals to run their course. And, you know, after feeling like they got, like, a decent draw away from home against Luton and sort of staving off any chance of Luton, like, leaping over them and out of the relegation zone, all of a sudden it's the very next day they get this big hit. So it's going to be interesting to see how, like, Nuno Espirito Santo and the rest of the players react to this. We saw Sean Dyche and Everton react very well, winning like 4 games in a row after their points deduction was announced. Will they like step up to the challenge, or will they sort of wither away and die? It's a huge opportunity for Luton. Luton, I stand by saying that they are one of the worst promoted teams, at the beginning of the season that I had ever seen in terms of the quality of players that I had watched when they were in the championship. They've obviously made a few very good signings, players like Ross Barkley and Chidoze Ogbene and Tahith Sambi Chong. Has Sambi played that much for them?
Every game.
Whatever. Sure. Throw Sambi in there. He doesn't immediately jump out to me. But yes, they've made some great signings. But they've had two teams in the Premier League, maybe not stalwarts. Nottingham Forest have been in the league for a year or two before this, only really a year. But they've got two teams with definitely bigger budgets, bigger payrolls than them, being given pretty big points deductions. I know Everton's got amended that kind of like helped them and brought
Six
them back
and
out
four,
of the relegation
right? Six
zone.
6-4, still a lot.
Yeah, but Everton's initially was a 10-point yeah. deduction, and then it got brought down to 6, and that's what leapfrogged Everton out of, you know, relegation trouble. I mean, it's still kind of lingering there, but you think they would be able to stave it off at this point. And now you've got Forest with a 4-point deduction, where, you know, they seem to be on the brink even before that points deduction was announced. They seem to be on the brink in terms of their overall form of like dipping into that relegation zone even without the deduction itself. So it's a huge opportunity that Luton, I really think they need to take. Like, it's gone from them being like, if they put up a good fight and they're respectable in the league, then they can go back down to the championship and come back up in a year or two. And that may be the best for everyone. But now, if I'm Luton, I'm thinking we need to take advantage of this.
You don't think the Burnley result has any gives them any hope at all here?
No, I don't. You don't get to play Brentford every week at home, and you don't get to play against 10 man yeah, Brentford no. every week
me
at home.
Too. I mean, they're 5
Reguilon
points
got
off
sent off after 10
yeah,
minutes.
No,
you know,
so. Did he get a draw against West Ham in the game before as well? It's 2 games without a loss for Burnley, which I don't know if they've done that this season.
If they were 2 wins, I'd be more receptive. But, you know, a draw is basically, it's basically a loss at this point of the season, unless you're playing against, you know, Liverpool, City or Arsenal.
Hey, they were winning the entire game against West Ham, and West Ham needed a 91st minute Danny Ings equalizer. So, again, like, decent result. Decent couple of games for Burnley. It seems like they're on life support, but they're still kicking a little bit because of the points deduction.
They're relegated. I'm not hearing it at all with Burnley. How about this, Javier? If they beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge after the international break, we'll reopen the door for them. They could do it, knowing us, but we'll see.
All right. Well, hold on. Just really quickly, super fast. They have a pretty easy end of the season. They're done with City. They're done with Liverpool, and they're done with Arsenal. So they still have to play Wolves, they have to play Everton, they have to play Sheffield, they have to play Nottingham Forest again. You know, they could pick up some points there. They got Brighton at home. You know, I'm not saying that Burnley are going to get, but they could do it. Like you said, they get a decent result at Stamford Bridge. They then have a home game against Wolves, an away game at Everton, home game Brighton. They could go on a run. I'm just saying, if there's a run for Burnley, it's going to happen right now.
They are 5 points off Luton, who are
and Sheffield
currently
after that. So,
17th,
yeah, they've got,
and they're 4 points behind Forest.
This is their easiest run of the season in the most important time of the season. So if they're ever going to do it, I'm just saying it's got to be right now, these next 5 games. And they've slightly turned the corner, so maybe.
Well, they're not going to have their best attacking player, David Dakhtar-Fofana, when they come to the Bridge, because he's obviously on loan. I think that's going to be a pretty big hit. But who knows? They maybe could still do it. They've got some other players. I'm just not willing to bet on it. But let's like give Forest like a little bit of a mention. I guess how much would you be shitting yourself if you're a Forest fan right about now?
I want to see how they react, Alex. I want to see how they go, how they do in these next couple of games that they play. You know, if it depresses the team and then they have a couple really bad results, I could see it really spiral them. I think if they get a win or two, they'll put it behind them. But they've been really struggling for wins in 2024, and I don't know. I think it really drags them into that relegation. I think that cushion they had, it's gone, and we were already talking about it, like you said before. No, like you were
they were in a relegation
no,
fight before.
I was about to say, like you were like... saying before, we were talking about it already, and now they're definitely completely in it. So.
So the next couple of games, they've got Crystal Palace at home. Huge one. Nottingham Forest then host Fulham, which, you know, Fulham seem to be showing up against, like, the bigger teams. Maybe they can get a, Forest can get a win or a draw out of that. Then it's Tottenham, Wolves, away Everton, huge game. Manchester City at home, Sheffield United away, Chelsea at home, Burnley away to finish. That could be, that could, like, outside of the title race, that could be, like, the game to watch based off, like, if you're, Burnley, you know, run.
Yeah, that could be insane if, like, right, if, like, Burnley are, like, right there in that last game against Forest, and, like, Forest are in, you know, if Burnley need a win to get jump Forest on that last day, that could be a crazy match.
I mean, and then there's even still Brentford to consider. I mean,
nah, I think Tony will keep them off, stave them off. Really,
it's been a couple of games.
Yeah,
that he
but
hasn't
they went on.
Now.
They've gone on like a horrendous run where they played like Arsenal, Liverpool, United, like City.
Yeah, they're 5 points ahead of Forest.
They just came out of their like worst run right of the now. Season. I'm pretty sure their like last 10 games or 9 games, they've got like some pretty easy teams. So. I'm pretty sure Brentford will pick up enough points to stay safe.
But yeah, it's getting crazy down at the bottom of the Premier League. And what do you know? It's all the... I think it's funny how only the teams down in the bottom of the league that are getting charges against them are getting points deductions. Like Chelsea, we have charges against us for something that happened like 10 years ago. City, like, famously have charges. Newcastle are facing possible charges. Those haven't been announced yet.
It could be because yours and City's are more in the past, so there's more, like, an investigation that needs to be done, while it's, like, Everton and Forest have, like, in the last 2 or 3 years, so.
But Newcastle's are like that. Newcastle's are the same. I mean, it's only slightly rumored. It's not been officially announced yet, so maybe I should just not talk about that one until that actually comes to fruition. But I give a lot of credence to the idea that a lot of fans are throwing around in England right now, where they say only the small clubs or the not, you know, historically big clubs are getting these charges, and it's a way to like keep those clubs down and prop up the big clubs so that they can keep making money and bringing eyeballs to the sport.
Alex,
even though,
are Chelsea back, Alex? Let's get to the Chelsea topic, because you guys are now...
No, we beat a 10-man championship.
No, I'm not talking
team.
About the Leicester team, Alex, because I don't give a shit about that Leicester result. It's worth it. We shouldn't even talk about the game. There's nothing to talk about.
Leicester are decent, man. They're going to be up in the league again next season.
Sure,
and,
but you guys would have...
going to look very different, but they're still going to be good.
You guys would have easily just walked that game if De Sassi didn't decide to like have a worldie into the top corner, and Sterling didn't decide to take the penalty from Cole Palmer and be a dickhead and get booed by the whole stadium.
I feel like I've said this maybe once or twice this season.
You guys made it hard on yourselves.
I think Axel De Sassi, as a player, as an individual player, the season he's having for Chelsea just perfectly encapsulates how our season as a team has been going. He's had games ranging from looking like the second coming of John Terry against Manchester City at the Etihad, being like amazing, making no mistakes, to this one where... You know, throughout the game, he was okay. It wasn't terrible, but just that one own goal, just the way it turned a 2-0, like, walk in the park, basically, for us into the struggle of all struggles that didn't even end up, like, on the score sheet looking like a struggle, because we scored the 2 late goals that made it 4-2, and anyone who didn't watch the game would just be like, ah, Chelsea beat a championship team 4-2 at home. Nothing here, nothing special to see here. But it was a struggle in that second half. I've never seen Chelsea fans booing a Chelsea player like they booed Raheem Sterling. And I'm not the biggest fan of that, because regardless of how bad a player is doing, missing a penalty, skying a free kick, missing another 1v1 in the first half to make it 2-0 earlier than it was, you don't boo your own players. Like, De Sassi made that mistake, and the Chelsea fans weren't booing him, like, for the own goal. It was just a horrific misjudgment of a pass back where he thought Robert Sanchez was, you know, more central in the goal.
Spoiled, entitled bitches, some of those Chelsea fans are, obviously. All right, man. So used to
success. We've seen plenty of Arsenal fans booing Arsenal players. I don't condone it then either. Though I agree with the sentiment, it's still wild to me to see Chelsea fans booing their own player. Like, yeah. And honestly, some of the boos started getting directed at Pochettino, because despite all the, you know, terrible execution.
He kept Sterling on the whole time.
Managed, he made his substitution around the time that Sterling had skied that free kick, or I think the 65th, maybe a little bit earlier than that minute. And, you know, they announced they were bringing on Carney Chukwuemeka. Good substitution. Happy to see him coming on. He eventually scored the winner. And then Mudryk's number went up. And, like, Mudryk wasn't man of the match.
Oh, that Palmer assist, Danny. Oh, that was so nice.
The Palmer assist was nice. Mudryk wasn't man of the match, but he was playing way better than Raheem Sterling was. So everyone just went mental when they saw that, because Sterling was the obvious player to take off. You would take him off, put Mudryk out on the left wing, play Chukwuemeka in the number 10 role, Palmer still on the right, and Jackson up top. It makes complete sense, but no. Take off Mudryk, keep Sterling on to keep butchering attacks. And, I mean, I won't say we're lucky, because obviously they were, Leicester went down to 10 men, and their sort of push to win the game kind of ended with that. They, you know, come back with the Zassi goal, own goal, and then Mabedidi, their winger, scored a great goal from cutting it off the left wing and just cooking Mabedidi. Gusto. What's that?
Exhale end product.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, he's a nice little player. Possible FPL asset that you may be talking about next season, Javier, when Leicester are back up. But overall, I'm a little worried for Sterling specifically, and how, you know, it seems like every Chelsea fan who has any sort of sense has come to the reasonable conclusion that he's too selfish to really excel and drive this team forward. He's not a player that you're going to build the team around, and he's going to get you bags of goals and set other players up. He's the kind of player that Manchester City was perfect for him, because it's already a ready-made machine that you can plug him in as a cog and he'll function well in that. Chelsea, we need a bit more influential play, and someone like Cole Palmer is taking that mantle away from Raheem Sterling, and he's doing it on, I can't even tell you what wages Cole Palmer's on right now, but he's not the sixth highest paid player in the league like Raheem Sterling is. Raheem Sterling is, you know, only like Salah, Haaland, Varane, Casemiro, these types of players are paid more than Raheem Sterling, and he's getting one assist against the championship team, and scored a couple goals against City, but he's just not done it enough. You know, players like Willian and Pedro were scoring and doing better more consistently for Chelsea, as are like second or third options. So, and there's nothing we can do. We can't sell him this summer. No one's going to be willing to buy him. He's not going to be willing to go to Saudi Arabia. So we're just going to have to figure it out and hope that he doesn't poison our entire team. But there's enough good things from this game, like Palmer, Chukwuemeka, the link up they had for that winner, the little back heel from Cole Palmer to set up Chukwuemeka.
I was about to say, Alex, lovely. This isn't necessarily your entire season, because you guys could still finish as high as seventh. You have two games in hand on seventh place West Ham. You're only 5 points behind them. If you win both of your games in hand, you go up into seventh place, Alex.
That's all well and good, but those two games in hand are at home against Tottenham and away Arsenal.
Yeah, you're not going to win your two games in hand. We all know that. But, you know, maybe you get a result against Tottenham or something, and then you guys
will win the Tottenham
home
game. It's just a matter of whether we draw or win the Arsenal away game, you know?
Neither of those are options for you.
Well, we already drew you guys at home. And, you know, we always step up for the bigger matches, it seems, this season. So never say never, Javier. Plus, we'll have a chance to absolutely ruin Arsenal's season. And that's priceless, you know? It's more than 3 points at that point.
You'll be nothing but a shit stain under our wheels in the road.
Yeah, Tottenham were saying that going into the that game at the Bridge back in 2015.
Yeah, look how they are
the
now.
One that we sealed Leicester's league title. They thought this will be easy. Nope. All right, Javier, let's mention some of these Champions League matchups that got announced last Friday since we last recorded. You got your wish. Arsenal-Bayern Munich.
Let's
Champions
go.
League quarterfinals.
Revenge time. We're going to rewrite history. No more of this 10-2 bullshit. We're going to get some good games. Well, I think it's going to be a great tie.
You guys are going to beat them 10-2 on aggregate this time, right?
No.
I mean, that's the only way to get revenge, right? You got to beat them as badly as
we just need to beat them in Munich after beating them, humiliating them at the Emirates. twice, just like they did to us. We just need to beat them twice. First time humiliation, second time humiliation. It doesn't have to be 5-1.
You need multiple 5-1s. 2 5-1 victories to get your revenge on Bayern.
Can you imagine? Tuchel would be fired the next day after the first 5-1.
I know
5-1.
You want to predict that, Javier. Take the bait. Do it.
All right. I think we'll score at least 3 in one of the games.
Okay, well, how about this? We'll save the predictions for next week because I think the Champions League quarterfinals are going to be played after, you know, the first weekend after the international break. It's going to be the following midweek. So we'll save the predictions till then. But then the other quarterfinal on that side of the bracket will be Real Madrid, Manchester City, a repeat of last year's semifinal.
Oh, by the way, Arteta has our Tuchel's number, so, you know, it should be an easy dub as usual. Did the W in the Champions League winning season.
Man, you have a really bad memory.
Oh, maybe it wasn't.
Tuchel was only in charge for the second half of that Champions League winning season. Didn't we also beat you guys at the Emirates with Lukaku in like the second game of that Lukaku season?
Yeah, that was the year after.
Sure,
that.
He's got it over. Let's move on. If Arsenal beat Bayern Munich, then they would have to play the winner of Real Madrid, Manchester City, the last two winners of the competition. So that's like the hard side of the bracket, which has, I'd say, three or four of the favorites. Those four teams are, you know, based off talent, probably the four of the best teams left in Europe, and they have to play each other for the chance at one place in the final. And then on the opposite side of the bracket, you've got PSG Barcelona and Atletico Madrid Dortmund, and the winner of those two games will play each other in the other semifinal. So it's kind of set up like it was last year, where I think it was Inter, Napoli, AC Milan, and I can't remember who the fourth team was, but like Inter and Napoli played each other. Inter beat Napoli. AC Milan played someone else and beat them. And then it set up an all Milan derby in the semifinal. But that's like the easy side of the bracket that you could see any of those teams going through. And right now I'm leaning PSG just because, you know, if you have Kylian Mbappe playing against Barcelona, Atletico Madrid and Dortmund, any of those teams, you'd favor a Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah, not gonna lie,
Alex.
If we come out into the, you know, into a final after beating Bayern and either Real or City, I mean, we're gonna win that final. So I don't care who's at the other side.
You say that, but if it's PSG, I'd still pick PSG. Over
really, choke PSG?
Mbappe's,
do you think
Mbappe's
they're
not going to lose?
They're
Arsenal.
Bigger chokers in the Champions League than we are, Alex.
Yeah, but Mbappe. If it's Barcelona, I'll give you it.
Yeah,
I think you guys would beat Barcelona.
You don't think William Saliba will have him in his pocket, Alex?
No, because he'll be too busy fleecing Ben White. All right, let's not drone on about this.
How dare
we're out of time
you.
For this week. No fantasy kitchen this week because obviously it's international break. There's nothing really to do. Maybe leave your fantasy team alone and let players play their international games. And if they get injured, then you won't have used your transfer already and be screwed going into next week and the Premier League returning. Javier, thank you for joining us. If you want to follow Javier, you can do so on Twitter, at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials, at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy your international break. We'll see you next week. And until next time, see you.